Hello, you're very welcome to the Alison Spittle Show. If you're listening to this when it comes out, it's the eve of the referendum to repeal the 8th. If you're listening to this on Friday, the 25th, go out and vote. Make a plan and go and vote. This week we are doing a special Repeal the 8th podcast with my lovely, lovely friend Tara Flynn. I'm very excited to have her on the show, so it's going to be good crack. If you're listening to this after the referendum, phew, ha! weren't we all?
Do you remember last week?
Sure, do you remember last week?
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Right. So Tara, thank you so much for coming in.
No problem.
You have been a big hero of mine in this referendum.
That's very kind of you to say. But yeah. It's just, I mean, it's kind of too much because I think there are so many heroes.
So many heroes, definitely, definitely. But I went down with you to Limerick, and you've been going around the country. You've been to Cork, Waterford. Where else have you been around Ireland with this referendum?
Gosh, Waterford, Kilkenny, Drogheda. We did Limerick, did Galway. That was just my own show, though, so that wasn't really the campaign. I've just gone wherever I was asked, really, if people have questions. And this is the thing, it's like there is a huge difference between sincere questions. You can always tell when it's a sincere question and someone's struggling to find their position on this, and when someone is just going, I know how I'll derail them. I know, I'll catch her out here. And it's like, this is something that actually happened to me. So, like, it's kind of cruel to try and derail, or, you know, we're not trying to win a debate. We're saying there's something happening. It's really happening around the country every day, and we just want to keep people safe. So it's not something that I feel, I think it's really disrespectful to try and trick people into stumbling or something. But actually, what I've seen is that most people who are for repeal have been as truthful as they can. They've shared their own stories, which is often grueling and just heartbreaking for some of them, especially with a wanted pregnancy that's been lost. And you're just like, would you ever give us a break, lads? Would you ever give us a break?
Yeah. It just the whole point of debating a lived experience seems like a ridiculous concept, really.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, like you can debate a theory, and people can debate when life begins, whenever they want, as much as they want. Mm. We're not all going to find consensus on it. You and I will believe something different. You know, people will believe different things. But what is incontrovertible is the fact that there's someone sitting in front of their doctor right now, or if they even trust their doctor enough to go and ask about it, that they're maybe taking matters into their own hands. But when people say to me, hear them out, I go, I have heard them out, I've lived it. You know, I was 14 when the 8th was brought in, and it was, you know, I remember the discussions all around then. I remember the fact that anyone who spoke against the insertion of the 8th was seen as a bit radical or out there, and definitely not necessarily a good person, a good, decent person abiding by the church's teaching. And whenever I say the church, I'm talking about the institution of the church, not the people of faith that make up the flock. But because everyone's doing their best. But it was, you know, if you went against that sort of teaching, the teaching that abortion is bad in all circumstances, you were a bit out there. And I'm glad that that's opened up a bit and people are talking.
No, it's good. It only took 35 years.
Yeah, or however many decades and however many centuries to just start to talk about it.
Yeah.
But you know, something that you and I were talking about during the week, that's interesting. We talked about the church there, and we talked about how people have different beliefs.
yeah,
on when life begins. The church has only relatively recently come up with the idea that there is personhood from conception.
From conception.
Yeah.
So that's when the sperm meets with the egg.
You see, when a man loves a woman very, very much. Yeah. So, yeah, from conception.
So that's how they get around the whole morning after pill aspect. You know, when I talk to someone who's against abortion,
yeah,
and I say, how do you feel about the morning after pill? And I asked some lady and she said, well, the morning after pill prevents the sperm from eating the egg.
It's supposed to prevent conception. Yeah, that's how it's supposed to work.
Right.
So even though things are maybe just about to happen, then yeah, but I took a morning after pill.
Yeah.
You know, and I still, for anyone listening who doesn't know, I got pregnant and I had to travel for an abortion. That's how I find myself in the middle of this maelstrom of a campaign.
Yeah.
Because I spoke out about it just to show that it happens to people and it happens with, you know, the best laid plans.
And it's also been great of you to stand up for people that have had social abortions. Do you know, like what a horrible
word.
What
they call social abortions. It's so dismissive, isn't it?
Yeah, it is so dismissive. But it's so good that somebody's actually saying, I am a good, because you are a good person, Tara.
Well, I do my best.
That's indisputable.
I'm an idiot. I mess up. I messed up. You know, something bad happened to me in 2006. I wasn't as careful as I could have been, having been so careful all along and smug that I would never get pregnant.
Yeah.
Ended up taking a morning after pill straight away and it didn't work.
Yeah.
So.
The people that want to retain the Eighth Amendment, they'll talk about, you know, they'll go, why don't you use contraception? Contraception doesn't work 100% of the time.
People do. Somebody I know who's pregnant right now had a long-acting contraception that failed.
Right.
You know, and it's like, you know, those are some of the most reliable you can get. It's, you know, not to freak anybody out, but there is always a failure rate. And even if you take a pill religiously or you have this long-acting contraception, a coil or something like that, it's not a guarantee. It's just the best you can do. And I certainly had done my best not to get pregnant. I'd been pretty responsible and pretty lucky. You know, there's always a combination. Because I often say to people, have you never had a crisis pregnancy? When people judge or get at me, I say, have you ever had a crisis pregnancy? No? Well, then you're lucky. And I don't just mean I envy you, which I do. You're lucky. I think you're lucky that you didn't. I wish I was you. That's great. I wish I hadn't had one. But also, you've been lucky. It's sheer dumb luck.
Yeah.
Because it can happen to anyone. And that was my message. That's why I wanted to speak out. It can happen to anyone.
You spoke out at Electric Picnic 3 years ago, was it?
Yeah.
And when you spoke out, what reaction did you think you were going to get?
I had no idea. And I was absolutely terrified. I just knew that the moment had come because I felt like a liar.
Mm.
I mean, it's a private thing. It's something you don't want to talk to just everybody about. And it's really weird that everybody knows it now. But by the same token, I felt like I was lying to cover up someone else's discomfort.
Yeah.
Because I was at peace with what I believed about abortion, what I believed about when life begins and all of that. And for me, it's not a person yet at 9 weeks, which is when I had mine. It's not a person.
No.
So, you know, it's not conscious, it's not sentient, it's not a person yet. Is it human life? Yes. Is it a person yet? The same as me? No. So I prioritized my own being. I did exist. The potential for life was there, but I actually existed and I prioritized myself. I'm absolutely at peace with that. That's fine. You know, when people go on about late-term abortions, the really gory sort of posters and things people will put up of 8 months gestation covered in blood and things like that. That's so disrespectful to the parents and families of wanted pregnancies that continue for a reason. You don't go past 12 weeks unless there's some really serious reasons. Mm. It could be lack of access. Irish women have later abortions than anyone else.
Because they have to travel and save.
Because they have to travel, save up, maybe get time off work. Mm. Or the only other reason you pass those 12 weeks is because it's a wanted pregnancy. Because this is something people don't talk about. Being pregnant's really hard.
Mm.
And the reason that people continue it is because they want to. That want to continue has to, you know, sort of surmount everything else.
Yeah.
But so, yeah, I spoke out and it's been very strange. I didn't know what the reaction would be, but I knew that I was at peace with it and that I was supported.
Yeah.
So then it's sort of a straightforward enough thing to do, because they can say, they can call you a murderer. They can call me a murderer if they want. I know that's not what I've done.
Yeah.
But according to my own beliefs and everything I've researched about it and everything I feel and know of myself and my body, I'm not. So they can say it till the cows come home, but I'm not. So what I discovered was in that tent that day at Amnesty's She's Not a Criminal event, which they'd asked me to MC because that's my job. Yeah. But they, I said, well, I've actually got some lived experience I can share. Shared it. And the amount of people in that room, Alison, who either started to cry, that tent really, not really a room, started to cry or told, some of them told their own stories. It was just clear to me in that moment that I had done the right thing in terms of solidarity with others, at least to say, I'm here. I get you. It happened to me.
Yeah.
And the amount of people then who, once you're visible on this issue, and you've been canvassing, I know, so as soon as you're visible on this issue at all, people tell you their stories.
Yeah, because you can be trusted, or they feel you can be.
Yeah.
And it's very lonely.
It's very isolating,
yeah.
To feel that your very laws say you've done a horrendous thing and you know in your heart that you haven't. And some people will believe you have, but many don't. And many have been there themselves. And many who believe in personhood from conception, that it's the same, that the embryo from its very first inception, conception, is the same as a born adult, is they need to access abortion care too. That's something to remember. We're also fighting for them.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, they do. They access it all the time.
But I don't understand about the church. The church's view on personhood from conception is if you have a miscarriage or a stillbirth, you're not offered to get that fetus baptized.
Yeah.
And it's a person, it's according to them.
According to them. It's contradictory, isn't it? And, you know, people talk about all kinds of grueling and grisly things about remains and things like that. But the truth is that early on, there isn't really anything. You know, at the moment at which I had my abortion,
yeah.
I might have miscarried the following week and not even really realised what was happening. You know, the truth, you know, you wouldn't have known to look at me that I was pregnant.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's first trimester, the majority, 92% of abortions happen pre-12 weeks.
Yeah, and can we talk about 12 weeks? When 12 weeks is mentioned, it seems like a long time. But when you're pregnant, it doesn't count from the last time that you had sex and the egg and the sperm came together. It comes from your last period.
Yeah, they.
So you'd have a period 2 weeks before that.
Yeah.
And so that's a 10-week fetus, which...
Yeah. I mean, there's when you had sex and then there's the gestational period, which is different. And you know, people don't often realise that till they're pregnant, which is bizarre. And then, you know, for instance, I'd taken a morning after pill. So I was at 8 weeks before I knew, because I thought the morning after pill had thrown my cycle out.
Yeah, of course.
Because it's such a serious dose of hormones that it can.
Yeah.
And I was so convinced, because I was always the person that had condoms in my wallet back when that was so shocking that muggers would hand your wallet back in disgust, which is a bit for my show. But, you know, because women having sex was so much worse than robbery. So it's like, you know, I didn't realise, people don't realise. And then if you add a trauma, so the reason for the 12 weeks, and this is something that people have to go back to, we have to be really robust and strong about the fact that this was arrived at, the 12-week recommendation was arrived at by some of the most conservative politicians in the country. And here's why. It's not because they want abortions for all. It's not because any of us does. I would love there to be no more abortions ever again, but that's unrealistic. You know, not every pregnancy is wanted and not every wanted pregnancy survives. So unfortunately, there'll always be a need for abortion. And so it should be safe. But so these very conservative politicians moved to a pro-choice position because, and to a recommendation of 12 weeks, they realised that the only way to make sure that everyone who's been traumatised, victims of rape, victims of incest, could be, you know, could be not re-traumatized was by being able to give, not to give any reason when they access the abortion.
Yeah. And
but no, not giving a reason doesn't mean there isn't a reason. So unrestricted as to reason, people are interpreting as for no reason at all.
Yeah.
That's not what it means. What it means as the reason she's choosing the abortion will not be asked. It's none of anyone's business. Up until 12 weeks. After 12 weeks, pretty much everything changes. And 12 weeks, if you've only discovered you're pregnant at 8 weeks, is pretty close. That's short. It's a short amount of time. But it's a fairly reasonable amount of time as a, okay, let's address this for once and for all.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. There are a lot of people when I was out canvassing that say, I have no problem with people getting abortions for fatal fetal abnormality or people that have been raped or incest, but I don't want it being used as contraception.
Wow. Yeah. That's so insulting.
It is so insulting. It feels to me, what they're saying is that my empathy and sympathy of a person with a fatal fetal abnormality doesn't stretch as far as my hatred and fear of sluts.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, this first line in my show, hi, I'm Tara and I'm a filthy slut, because it's how you get cast if you have an abortion that you choose for yourself because you know that, you know, it hasn't been doctor mandated. It's not a medical, it's not for medical reasons.
Yeah.
And the problem with that is, It's a misogynistic position, and I don't mean to be, you know, dismissive of anybody's views.
Maybe but I shouldn't have put it that strongly.
No, but it's treated as a middle ground view, and it's actually an extreme one. And I want to help people understand that.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying you're wrong or you're bad in any way for thinking that, because I understand that, you know, it's much more sympathetic if someone is losing a pregnancy naturally that you want to help them. I understand that's a really kind attitude, that if someone has been raped, you're there for them. I understand that and I thank you for it. But if you're fine with ending that pregnancy, you're fine with ending a pregnancy. Mm. What is the difference medically between the fetus of consensual sex and the fetus in rape? There's no difference. There's no difference biologically. There's no difference medically. You're okay with the ending of that pregnancy in one circumstance but not another. Means that you are judging the person who is choosing to end it. And again, they might miscarry next week. You can't be hypothetical about this. You have to be concrete.
Yeah.
And what it means is that the person hasn't suffered enough for your empathy, exactly as you say. And I don't think that's a very kind or compassionate position, even though it's attempting to be, because you're there for the people who are traumatized. Well, let me explain that just because it's not a tragedy doesn't mean it's not a crisis. I was traumatized by the crisis pregnancy.
Yeah.
That was a very, very dark place for me to be in mentally and emotionally and physically. And it's very hard to describe. It's like being trapped. It really is like being something in a horror movie. You feel completely trapped and you will do anything to end that pregnancy. You cannot. It's the pregnancy you cannot cope with. So adoption is always an option. Unfortunately, that's not the case. Well, there are all kinds of issues with saying adoption is always an option, which I think there are lots of great adoption organizations who've dealt with that properly, or people who have been adopted who have addressed that better than I can, because I don't know their experience, so I'm not going to attempt to represent it.
Yeah.
But adoption, in terms of where I'm coming from, my own experience, adoption is an alternative to parenting, as they say. It's not an alternative to pregnancy. You know, so if you cannot continue a pregnancy, you cannot continue it. You cannot cope. You know, some people find it very easy to end a pregnancy. I didn't. I really weighed everything up. It was one of the biggest decisions I've ever made and one of the most difficult. But once I had done all my research and really examined what I believed, I was fine with it. And it became a relief. But the trauma, the crisis was the pregnancy itself. So, you know, it's always interesting when people go down that route. But
I feel as well that some people on the no side who put up pictures of fetuses on lampposts and outside maternity hospitals, I feel like they're trying to re-traumatize people. Yeah. And they kind of don't care who they traumatise, but I think they want to get at people that have had abortions and don't regret it, and then go, look what you've done.
Yeah, there's a bit of that. And when we say, oh, that I find that upsetting, they'll say, oh, that's guilt.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
No, it's not. It's not guilt. That doesn't mean it doesn't trigger those feelings of crisis that I had at the time. Doesn't mean it doesn't trigger my empathy for people who have miscarried wanted pregnancies.
Yes.
Or have had to end wanted pregnancies at a later stage because they're not going to survive outside the womb. So it's upsetting and distressing for many reasons. No, you know, they can project their the guilt they might feel onto us if they want, onto we hussies, people like me. That's not, no, I don't have guilt about it. So, you know, it's always interesting when people try to trigger those emotions. But I have found it upsetting because I'm thinking of someone traveling this week and on an air coach looking at those posters.
Yeah.
What it also does is it makes people feel brutalized so they don't want to speak. And then it shuts the conversation down again.
Yeah, I know people that have had abortions that will not, definitely not speak out because of.
And why would they?
No, so, I'm so sorry that you were so brave and you've done this, and it really upsets me that the way you've been treated, Tara.
Oh, listen, it is upsetting on one level, but because I don't believe what they're saying, it ends up being okay.
Good.
You know what I mean? No, it's like the worst bit is having someone take your character, put words in your mouth, maybe lies, you know, Photoshop you saying something. Like taking something that when I say I was relieved and I don't regret my abortion, they turn it into a murderous boast.
Right.
Like, aborted my only child, and they put it on my repeal shirt.
Oh, what a,
you know, do you remember
person.
That one?
Yeah.
And it's like, that's certainly not what I said. I didn't have a child. It wasn't even a baby yet. So it doesn't. Those are not my beliefs, and it's not something I would have said in a boastful way, because it's not something I'm proud of. But it's not something I'm ashamed of. It's just an experience that I had. But so they can again try and put their values onto me, but that won't work as a way to brutalize. It won't work because that's not what I believe happened. They'll say things like, "You could have a 12-year-old by now," and I say, but I don't. And I've told you all the reasons that I was traumatized, that I was in crisis, that I was depressed, that all of that was so frightened by being in a crisis pregnancy that I could not continue. They go, yes, but you could have a lovely boy or girl. And I go, but that's hypothetical. And when people say, you might not be here if you were aborted, it's like, or my mum might have miscarried.
Yeah.
Or my parents might not have met. Or I could have been knocked down by a bus. Let's go through all the hypotheticals. We'll be here all day.
That would be the worst ever version of Back to the Future.
Wouldn't it?
Marty, your mother's going to...
Yeah. Marty, your mom's making a choice for herself.
You know, back and bully her into going through with
the pregnancy. No, we support her in all her choices. That's the other thing that people go, oh, you just want abortions. And I go, hang on. What would be in it for me? What would be in it for any of us who are saying a woman should be supported in whatever she chooses? To say she should have an abortion. No way.
No.
My God. Imagine. Because also that's a kind of coercion. And when we've experienced that coercion.
Yeah.
You know, and it can come seeming gentle. It can come from people trying to help. But like, don't, please don't. I had one friend, I told two just before I traveled. One was there with me when I was actually doing the pregnancy test. And she said, you should go out and get a pregnancy test. And I said, no, I don't need one. I took a morning after pill. And she said, I really think you should go. So I ended up doing four. Not so certain I was that I couldn't be pregnant. And I told another. And it turned out she was anti-choice. And that was okay. I respected her view. But the hardest part was that she was saying, you'd be a great mum. Please don't do this. And it was like, no, like I can't.
Yeah.
I can't. Like when I say I can't do it, I don't mean I don't feel like it. I don't mean I couldn't be bothered. I mean I can't. I can't. You must trust me on this. I can't go any longer being pregnant. I don't know what I'll do if I have to.
Yeah.
Take people seriously when they say that. They're not messing. And they're not saying, when people reduce this to social abortions or it's an inconvenience, you couldn't be more insulting or wrong about how most people are affected by a crisis pregnancy. It's a very serious thing. If you've never experienced it again, I'm delighted for you. I hope no one ever has to again, but they will today.
Yeah.
So we've got to be realistic and we've got to acknowledge that's what's got to happen is we trust the person who's in the crisis pregnancy. Some of them will change their minds. Yeah. Some of them will go on to have a beautiful, healthy baby that they adore.
Yeah, and they're proposing a waiting period, aren't they?
Yeah.
So it's like 72 hours or something.
Yeah,
like that.
I mean, I suppose they're going to have to calm people down about the hussies who'll just go in and rush things through. In my experience, from the people I've spoken to and from my own lived experience, by the time I made the decision, by the time I reached out for help, the decision was already certain.
Yeah.
So again, I think 72 hours is, you know, it might work for some people, but I feel like by the time they already go to the person who'll impose the 72 hours, they're already way more than 72 hours in to thinking.
Course.
72 hours isn't going to change them one way or the other. Maybe one or two. Look, and whatever people feel they need. But I think with informed consent and informed access, what happens is that people do go away anyway for as long as they need.
Mm.
They don't just go, I'm gonna book it tomorrow. You probably won't have availability tomorrow. You know,
no.
There's all kinds of barriers. You might not have time off work tomorrow. You're going to need time to recover. So I think by the time someone reaches out for help, the decision is made. I think the 72 hours is a little bit dismissive of the person's own experience. And it's a little bit of added trauma. What if they have to travel home to somewhere outside, wherever they can get access, travel back? I think it adds extra hardship. If people need it to assuage their moral consciences, not the person who's in crisis. And think about that, guys. It's to assuage your conscience, not the person who's in trouble. But if you need it to give her access to the healthcare that she needs, we'll have to start with that.
Yeah. and this is going to be abortion pills dealt out by a GP.
We would hope, yeah.
Yeah,
that's the hope. That's the proposal.
And the No Side are pushing forward this narrative that people that will have to wait for cancer operations will have to wait longer because all of these abortions are going to put a strain on the HSE.
I don't believe it's going to work like that. And we'd need a medic to confirm that. So I can't really speak on the medical side of things. All I have is lived experience, really, and the people I've spoken to. You know, I've been trying to keep an eye on all that. But I believe that, you know, from what I've heard from people in Doctors for Choice, is that it won't work that way. You know, that the person will hopefully be in their own home, but able to consult.
Right.
So it's not like it's going to. It'll be a consultation, a prescription, and then, an ongoing consultation, you know, checking in. That's what I believe it'll look like. And again, so early on that, you know, because the majority are 92% are pre 12 weeks, something like 80% are pre 10 weeks. It's as soon as someone knows.
Yeah.
So it will be abortion pills. It will be, you know, people won't even, it'll go back to the private realm. And what people say, they're going to be more abortions in Ireland. Well, the rate of crisis pregnancy and people who choose to end their crisis pregnancy by abortion, again, some will choose to continue their pregnancies.
Yes.
Just because it's unwanted initially doesn't mean people don't change their minds. Some unwanted pregnancies continue to be unwanted and uncopable with, so people will end it with abortion. The rates of those decisions won't change. But what will happen is that, you know, the location will change and people will be safer. And the people who currently can't access abortion will have access. Because don't forget, I'm one of the lucky ones.
Yeah.
I had the money to go. Not a lot of money at the time, but I had enough to go. I had plenty of time because I wasn't working. So I was able to go as soon as I was able to get an appointment, which was a week later. But there are lots of people who, because of a disability, can't travel, or women who are migrants and can't get a visa to travel. They can't go and access healthcare. Also, the money it costs. There are people who are below the poverty line and simply can't afford it, but nor can they afford to sustain another mouth to feed. So, you know, they might already, 52% or something like that are already parents.
Mm.
It's a slight majority, but the majority of people accessing abortion are already parents. So this image of this flippant, and in fact, this is the image at the centre of the No campaign, this irresponsible, cruel, flippant, casual, promiscuous woman who deserves to have a punishment, and the punishment is motherhood.
Yeah.
That diminishes motherhood too.
Motherhood is not a punishment.
No, it's a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
It's so special and precious and wonderful. But what if every child were a wanted child? when it develops into a child. Because the no side also loves to say baby and child to put a picture in your head the of this unborn. Irresponsible, cruel, monstrous woman who kills, you know, kills our baby. When the majority, there is no baby yet.
What about young men? I hear a lot from young men that say, this is a woman's issue. I can't be involved.
We're getting into that lovely hashtag we put up. Oh, yeah. Repeal AQs, which is great because, I mean, some of these are coming up a few times. And Well, it is a men's issue for a few reasons. Men are usually there at conception. Mm-hmm. Usually. Not always, but usually. and the other thing is that this affects families. Mm. As we've discovered, 52% are already parents. Often that's in a family situation. It might be a lone parent, but often it's a family situation. So the father is included in the discussion because there's already a family. And some people will say, I just think it's right for me to leave it. But if we aren't all free, then none of us is free. So the society is better for all of us if we're all free and if we have our autonomy. And the thing is, for me, this gets dragged down explanations about abortion so much. But the fundamental thing is, as soon as you get pregnant, even in a continued pregnancy or the actual birth, you lose your right to consent. You lose your right to medical treatment. So if they're worried about cancer treatment, they need to repeal the 8th because women have been denied cancer treatment. And again, I'm not going to go into where obstetricians or cancer doctors, oncologists, etc. That's their territory. So I'm not going to assume to. It's amazing to me how every anti-choice spokesperson is an expert on gynecology, and they don't ever say, I actually don't know all the facts and figures for that. No. I don't know all the facts and figures for that, but people like Louise Kenny on Twitter, she's incredible, and she's been, you know, become more of a spokesperson now. She's just incredible on this, and you've just got to listen to the actual experts, the people treating people. But we know that consent is removed. The AIMS Ireland, they talk all about maternity services and the midwives for choice. They will tell you they can't treat people as well as they can during pregnancy and birth because of the 8th.
Yeah.
The fact that you get pregnant and someone can put their hands on you, they can detain you, they can section you, they can operate on you without your consent is absolutely terrifying. And people should talk about that.
Yeah, the no side seem to also put forward this narrative that Savita was killed not because of the 8th Amendment. Savita Halapanar was a lady up in Galway who died from sepsis after being refused an abortion in Galway about... How many years ago now?
It was 2012, wasn't it?
Yeah, so too long ago. Mm-hmm. And the no side pushed forward this narrative that she was killed due to medical negligence rather than being refused an abortion. And that's been picked apart by three different reports, I think. But they still push forward this narrative.
Yeah, no, but they're going to try and... their whole... campaign has been run on twisting facts, and I'm sorry, and I'm not talking about no voters or people who are confused. I'm talking about no campaigners, who most of what they've said has been disproved. A lot of what they've said has been disproved, if not most. And it's disingenuous, it's cynical, and when they're called on it, they don't ever say, no, I'm not lying. They just move on to the next point.
They never answer back. Yeah, like these, when I've been canvassing, the 1 in 5 abortions in the UK gets cited a lot, the poster that's up at the moment. And when you tell them that that's disputable, they go, no, it's on a poster. It has to be true. And there's been a lot of misinformation, I think, put around this referendum. And I wonder, like, will these people be punished for lying? Or
no, I don't think so. I would hope that if there's any punishment, for want of a better word, that it will be that it didn't work.
Yeah.
That Irish people saw through that. I don't just mean Irish people. People living in Ireland who do get to vote on this will have seen through that. Mm. And that, that... this concerted campaign of misinformation and discrediting of people who do speak, that their expertise, you know, like Peter Boylan or Louise Kenny or anyone who's written a report on Savita, you know, that these things happened. They are true. Savita asked for an abortion. She had a medical background herself. She worked in dentistry, and she knew what was happening and that she could get sepsis if action wasn't taken. And action wasn't taken. And many, many obstetricians now say that, you know, that it's not a good enough to have to wait till a woman is dying to act.
And that's what we were doing underneath this law now.
That's what is happening under the eighth. It has to be basically an imminent risk to her life. So she has to be dying before they can act, but which means that she's dying.
Yeah.
And that's really not a good standard of care. And I don't think most doctors in Ireland, I don't think they think it's a good enough standard of care. So that's why so many of them have stood up for the Yes campaign. But yeah, so we were talking about men, though. Just we need you, men, we need you. And something I've heard as well, which has been an interesting take on it. I don't think it's necessarily a good take, but it's an interesting take, that what about if there's a couple and they get pregnant by accident, she doesn't want to continue the pregnancy but he does, but it's his child. And I find that an interesting sort of a conundrum, an interesting moral conundrum. But here's the bottom line.
It's her body.
It's her body. She can't continue. And again, it's not just her body. Like, she's throwing the strop going, I don't feel like it. Believe her. Like I say, like with any pregnant, if she says, I can't cope with this, I can't do this now, believe her. Now, it might mean that that's the final strain on the relationship. It might mean the relationship can't continue, because whether some, you know, wanting to parent or not can be a deal breaker.
Yeah.
But you cannot force someone to remain pregnant against their will. You can't do it. It's classed as torture. And I don't think many relationships survive torture. Although, you know, I suppose, you know, great. What's that bloody Christian Grey? He's got a lot to answer for in terms of, no, but, you know, so if you like whips and chains and all that, go for it. Go for it. But forcing someone to continue pregnancy against their will is not good.
If a couple are together and the lad needs her liver, and she has to give consent to give that liver over. He can't force her.
I mean, and the thing is, if it's a good and strong relationship, of course people will talk it all through.
Yeah. Yeah.
But ultimately, if she can't continue. So I just wanted to address that one, because people say, oh, no one's talking about that, but I did. And it comes up a little bit in talks. So I just wanted to address that here so that we have addressed it. But that's really what you're talking about. You're always talking about someone in crisis, someone who's telling you they cannot do it.
Yeah.
So don't take that lightly or dismiss it.
I think it's the Tuesday before the referendum, and I think I'm spent. Mentally.
Yeah, I'm really spent.
I'm so tired and so sad.
Yeah.
And so angry. And yet there's so much to do. And I just feel helpless.
Yeah.
I mean, how are you coping with this?
I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm not.
No. It's very hard.
Sorry. And, you know, we meant this to be sort of an irreverent and fun podcast, but we're all out. And
yeah.
It's very hard to keep taking personal digs while you're trying to stay positive. You're also reliving a crisis that happened to you. It's a real thing.
Yeah.
It should be a private thing, but it's now public property and people debate it, along with people who are supposedly on side saying, you're too much. Don't swear. Don't smile more. You know, please feck off.
Yeah.
We're giving every, I mean, you're clearly worn out. I can feel it from, you know, you're emotionally wrung out. You've been canvassing. We're putting ourselves out there in ways that we shouldn't have to do. And all to walk up to someone's door, knock on it and say, can I have my rights, please? None of us knows what we would do in a crisis. You can't know until you know. Can I please have my right to do what, not asking you to change your mind or your views. Your views won't be touched. Can I please act according to my views when it happens to my body? And that people will smile and say, no.
No, yeah.
No, I'm voting no. And you go, no problem, thank you. If you think that doesn't tear strips off a person, off people up and down this country right now.
Or to have people on late night talk shows just dehumanize you.
Yeah.
All the time. And talk about you on Twitter and be horrible and then maintain that you're somewhat of a... Like, these suited men, these chino-wearing pricks that will call you a murderer to your face or on Twitter, but then go on Irish TV and maintain that he is no... I have no problem with this. It's just... the killing of the unborn. And it makes me so tired.
Yeah.
Because no one's tone policing them.
No.
No. And they can be horrible. And you just have to take it. As a woman, you just have to sit down and take your medicine. Because you really need this to pass Friday.
Yeah.
You really need people to sympathize. I'm so... Yeah, I wish I could be jokier about it.
Because it's not funny. It means everything. It's literally our freedom. And the thing is, with so many people of faith, they're really considering this deeply, and I'm so grateful to them for that. Because don't forget, when I was growing up, we only ever heard one view.
Yeah.
Only ever heard one side. And, you know, we don't need to debate it. We've lived it, you know. And... I just wish people would trust us, that we're not irresponsible, horrible people.
Yeah.
I saw some troll yesterday saying, oh, in quotes, oh, killing babies is such a hard sell, Tara Flynn. Like, as if I had said, you know, but it's like, that's not what I believe it is. So,
and you're not doing this for any gain other than rights. In fact, like, you know, you've lost so much.
Yeah.
And you're being so selfless. Like, that's why I admire you so much.
Well, that's very kind. I don't feel selfless. In a way, I feel selfish because I couldn't have stayed quiet.
Yeah.
So this is like, I have to now see this through. I couldn't have stayed quiet. I knew there'd be hate. I grew up in an Ireland where there was such hate that we just didn't talk about it. Now we talk about it. Now we realise we're all there. There's so much more solidarity than ever before. Every time you knock on a door and there's a yes.
Oh my God, it's so great.
Brilliant. And it seems to be quite a few of them. So we've got to be hopeful. You know, I'm really hopeful. I'm so wrung out, but I'm hopeful.
Yeah.
I think we might be about to be free. I really hope we are. If we're not... I don't know, get ready for stuff to be on fire. I'm not saying I condone it or that I'll do it, but I will understand if other people do. But, you know, we have to trust women. We have to believe them. We have to just stand with them. So if you're a man and you think this is our business, the only way to let it be our business is to vote yes.
Yeah, that's genuinely the truth. And you'd be doing such a good thing. It would be incredible. I don't know, seeing people with yes badges when I'm leafleting or canvassing makes such a big difference. It just lifts your heart so much. And so when some short little prick comes up to you and calls you a murderer, like some lad did to me yesterday.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, it's fine. It's fine. But then the chirpy lad who just points at his badge and goes, I'm voting. That's all you need.
Yeah.
And it helps so much this week.
It helps so much. But I mean, when the repeal jumpers first came out.
I'm probably not changing anyone's minds. sorry.
But you see, the thing is, your job isn't, I've always said this, our job isn't to change someone's mind. Our job is to reassure someone that their mind doesn't have to change.
Yeah.
We just want to make up our own.
Yeah, yeah.
Their mind is intact. Yeah. Their mind won't be touched. Their views won't be touched. They need to let us make up our own. That's all we're asking.
Yeah.
That's all we're asking, which is a reasonable request. No matter what way you look at it, people of faith, their free will is the core tenet of the Catholic Church, that you learn right from wrong. You hit the age of reason. You're able to go to confession. You're able to have sacraments. You know right from wrong. When you know right from wrong, according to your own conscience, then you act. And many, many people weigh up what they believe. They weigh up their conscience, what they know to be right for them. They make their peace with it. And then they act accordingly. And the eighth removes that right.
Yeah.
And even within a faith boundary, that isn't right. That's not right. It's not right to take away someone's free will. Now, and back to the hashtag and the people were asking about regret.
Yeah.
Some people do regret. Some people do. But according
to... They're totally entitled to regret as well.
Well, of course.
I know you're not saying that.
No, but of course. But that's where I'm about to go. It's like, I can't imagine how painful that is. That must be awful. Very often I believe it's around 5% from American figures. It's around 5%, which is very low. But it's around 5%, it doesn't make it less real, but it's around 5% who regret. And if they regret, it's often because they were coerced or it's because they experienced stigma afterwards.
Mm.
That's where a lot of trauma comes post-abortion, is social stigma, which is why it's something I would like to work hard to help remove. Because you're only doing the best for you and any existing family or any potential family, you know.
Yeah.
So that people do regret, but it's only 5%. And again, not to take away from their trauma, but we still support them. We acknowledge that that must be absolutely horrible, but at least they had their choice. And the thing to remember is that 95% are grateful for the care they got and are relieved afterwards. That's a high percentage, and that's the truth. And people know this anecdotally from people that they know, because we all know someone.
Mm.
But those are the figures. I can't tell you where they're from, but they're available. You can Google it, 95% relief. You can Google it, and that those are the best available studies, because we have no honest studies about Ireland.
Mm.
Because we've only just started talking about it.
Yeah. Yeah. What else is there on the hashtag?
Let's see. So there was, oh yes, abortion up to birth for fetal abnormalities. First of all, at birth, after viability,
yeah,
that's birth. So no one's going to be, infanticide is not in question here. So that is illegal. That is wrong. That is not something that's going to happen. If a baby is viable, it will be born. So after viability, which I think is around 24 weeks, which, but that would still be quite on the cusp, very, you know, unfortunately, if a baby is born at that point, it's unlikely to survive. With every passing week, there's more. You know, I've only been listening to all this recently. I'm not an obstetrician, so I can't really tell you.
Yeah.
But that's what I've gleaned from what I've been hearing at the talks. But so early delivery is what usually would happen, I believe, after that sort of point. If a baby is healthy, there would be no need for an abortion. Nobody gets to 6 months and then goes, I can't be bothered.
Yeah.
Nobody does
Nobody
that.
Does
Nobody
that.
Goes, I can't be bothered at 6 months. If you've reached somewhere like 6 months, you've gotten past all the sickness, all the fatigue, all the questions you had in your mind, and it's a wanted pregnancy. In almost all cases, at that point, it's a wanted pregnancy. So we can't heap trauma on people who are losing a wanted pregnancy.
Yeah.
A family there, they're already experiencing, they're envisaging, they're dreaming about, they now are losing. And we can't, as TFMR, the Termination for Medical Reasons, who are just such heroes, they shared their stories long before anybody else, their traumas, their sorrows with everybody, just so that other people wouldn't have to go through it. But they call it, don't stop punishing tragedy. So by 6 months, it's a tragedy. And do you want to be the person to tell the grieving family that they have to go through legal hoops, or, you know, that they have to travel?
Yeah.
So there is no abortion up to birth. If it's a healthy pregnancy, it's called birth.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's no medic in the land who's going to end a healthy pregnancy that's viable.
No.
So people need to, that is absolute scaremongering, and people need to, you know, pregnancy's hard. People don't go up to 6 months and then change their minds. Let's see. So we've done, abortion is contraception.
Oh, yeah.
Makes no sense.
No. Anecdotally, like getting an abortion is, like, let's say even if it happened in Ireland.
Yeah.
You have to wait the 72 hours. You have to go take those pills. You have to go to the doctor. It's way less, people are going to use contraception.
People use contraception. It doesn't always work, but people do use it. You know, people want to avoid crisis pregnancy. No one who doesn't want to be pregnant wants to be pregnant for a little bit. No one takes that risk, or definitely doesn't take it lightly. It happens to people. People make mistakes, and some people maybe do have a more cavalier attitude to it. I don't know. I don't know many like that, but maybe they do. Don't judge them. We all make mistakes and we all have different views. But it is so much easier, more convenient, less painful, cheaper to use contraceptive.
Yeah. Abortion is for when contraception doesn't work.
Yeah.
Or, you know, any reason at all. But abortion is not used for contraception.
It's not used for contraception. It's it's expensive compared to contraception. Mm-hmm. It's also, you know, if you've even taken a morning after pill, you know how it throws your body completely. Like,
oh,
it,
completely.
You go through hell. How much easier to take a pill once
and
a day?
And lads
or
think morning after pill is like la-di-da.
I know. Yeah, the morning after pill alone, it really throws everything. It throws, that's how I didn't realise I was pregnant. It throws everything in your body for a month, maybe more.
Yeah.
So no one takes emergency contraception lightly. Now, I'm not saying some people take it regularly. Some people do. That was, you know, that's fine. I'm not going to judge them. That's the way they want to manage it. For me, that would be like, what?
Yeah.
It takes such a toll on me that I'm like, no, I'm going to use regular contraception.
Yeah.
But there have been moments in my life where I wasn't on long-term contraception. And it was at one of those moments at the age of 37.
Yeah.
That it happened to me.
And lads as well, the no side go, let's not legislate for hard cases.
Oh, for God's
sake.
Don't
they say that for, you know, we must, like, that. Like, there are some people that go, yeah, I get it. There's a very small percentage of people that get raped and have to and become pregnant or need termination for medical reasons. That's a very small percentage. Let's not legislate for that. But yet they throw the very minute percentage of people that might have multiple abortions. And I don't judge. I really don't judge anyone that has multiple abortions.
Nor do
and
I.
It's so it's weird to discuss it and then go, that's not a thing, because
some people do. Some people do have, and it's absolutely, look, that is how they need to manage their lives. That's, you know, it would really take it out of me. I've had one and it really took it out of me. You know, it was really, it was a tough decision to make, and it was, I found it physically and mentally hard. It was the right thing for me, so it was worth doing, but it was difficult. It was, you know, I wouldn't ever want to have another one. Some people are fine. They find it a very straightforward procedure. That's them. But it's often when people have multiple, they're in a very tricky situation, like domestic violence.
Right.
Many people who have repeat abortions are people who are in a coercive situation they cannot escape. So it's important to remember that sort of thing. Let's not mythologize again about this irresponsible woman who's just cruel and doesn't care. And, you know, there are all kinds of different reasons.
Why would you want that person to be a mother anyway?
Right.
Why would that be a fitting?
I'm asking for anyone who's going to vote on Friday and they're thinking of this mythical slut. Who thinks abortion's an easy thing to do and is just going to use it instead of taking a pill or getting a coil and chatting to her doctor about long-term contraception. Instead of picturing that woman, even if you see me as that woman, forget me for a second, think about the women in your own life. Would they be that flippant? Would they be irresponsible without good reason? Or if they are irresponsible, momentary lapse, human being, would they just trot off easily to just access, an abortion before thinking about contraception? They wouldn't. So what are the situations they might encounter that would lead them to making a decision like that, thinking it's the most responsible thing they can do? What kind of stress are they under? How hard are they finding all the judgment and all the stigma while they try and make that decision, the right decision? Think about real people. Stop thinking about hypothetical or invisible women like the floating fetuses in the no posters.
Yeah.
Somehow sustaining themselves without another person's body. Think of real women. Think of the women that you know. Think about, you know, some of them have already made that decision. So maybe park your judgment for a minute. Think about what it might be like to face a crisis pregnancy, because believe me, you can have as many theories as you like. You won't know until you know.
Mm. And the only way that you are a no voter is if you believe that there should be no termination for medical reasons, termination for rape, incest,
we urgently need to deal with those. Like, I can't believe that they're the people who've been spoken about the longest and the most sympathetically, and no one's acting for them yet.
No.
We have to act for them urgently.
Yeah.
Like, they are, I can't believe the hardship they've been through and the generosity of sharing their stories. Mm. But for anyone then to say, no, you should continue your pregnancy too. It's like, well, some people do choose to, and it's incredibly tough. Some people do choose to continue those fatal abnormality pregnancies.
And fair play to them.
Fair
and that's
play.
The right decision, and that's such a sad situation, and I'm so sorry
about
it.
It's certainly not an easy choice.
No.
I absolutely, you know, I want to hug them for making it, you know, just because. And but I also want to hug the ones who can't cope with that and choose for both the developing baby within them and for themselves in terms and their own existing kids that they know it's the right decision for them. But so if you want any change at all, you know, forget the sluts.
Yeah.
Forget me.
How do we put that on a campaign sheet? Forget the sluts.
Forget the sluts. If you want any change for the non-sluts.
Vote yes.
Vote yes. So yeah, that's the only one. That's the only way that you can look after those people. So there was only one other thing I think on the hashtag, and I've probably worn people out now, yabbering on.
No, I'm happy you
two
did.
Small
Sorry.
Things to... So yeah. That people are distrustful of the media. I don't blame them.
Yeah.
Because... Until, like, I've heard that, you know, Matt Cooper and Ivan Yates had a fact checker on last night. I welcome that so much.
That's the way it should be done.
That's the way it should be done. Instead of two people spouting two different conflicting things, one, and I'm going to say it, the yes side carefully sticking to lived experience, expertise and facts.
Yeah.
And the no side, someone who just feels strongly about a thing but has no lived experience, no expertise in the field, just saying something else.
How do you feel about the media coverage of this referendum
so far? Poor.
Yeah.
In general, now there have been exceptions like Ellen Coyne. Woohoo!
I know.
She's been incredible. Few people have been doing their best. Kitty Holland, Fintan O'Toole at the Times. People have been trying and to just get the facts out there and to rebut any lies. The problem with lies is once they're out there, you're rowing back. It sounds defensive to try and go, that's not true.
Yeah.
And the no side knows that. So they just keep saying, if you say something often enough, some people will believe it.
Yeah.
No matter how often it's rebutted. So I think that the fact checking didn't start often enough. I think some people who see themselves as serious, impartial political commentators have an anti-choice slant. Very hard not to have it in Ireland as a starting point because it's what we were all
anti-choice when I was
I think. And
I had no idea about the world.
No idea about the world. And also, when you've only heard one view, it takes incredible strength to stand back and go, hold on, how do I actually feel about it? And that's something I learned about personhood and the development. So I do not believe that a fetus is a person yet.
Yeah.
Murder is the killing of a person.
Yeah.
I don't believe a fetus is a person yet. Now, this is the thing, and this is quite harsh. Some people find this too much, and I apologise if anyone is upset by this. I really don't mean to be. But what I want to do is counter the fact that some people say, we never address this. And I never give my personal belief, or rarely do, because I don't feel my belief is valuable. Because it's not going to tally with the belief of the person who's in the crisis pregnancy right now. That's whose belief matters. We all need to know what our view is on abortion or developing life.
Mm.
But we don't impose our view on anyone else because we're not the person in crisis.
Yeah.
So I believe that it's not a person yet. And as it develops, it becomes more like a person. And by the time it's ready to be born, it is a person. But later in the pregnancy, if it will not survive, that is the parent's call. If it will not survive, that is the parent's call. The people who love it most, the people who want it most to be born, that's their call. So that's what I believe. For what it's worth,
yeah,
you know, it's just a personal view. People all that I acknowledge that your view will be different. My husband's view will be different. Everyone's view is different on this. The church's teaching on it is new. It used to be at the quickening. They said that personhood arrived at the quickening.
Tell me about the quickening.
Quickening was around 24 weeks, around medically and scientifically what would be viability or the beginnings of viability. And it used to be, I think it was based on, again, check out a theologian on this, not an Egypt comedian like me, but I believe it was roughly when people would start to feel movement, which is why it was called the quickening. I think they also used to call it ensoulment. And I think in Islam and Buddhism, and they talk about ensoulment too, but it's later on. It's later on. It's not the very early. And that's for people to, you know, maybe park some of their fears around that most abortions will be at 12 weeks or before.
Yeah.
You know, 80% by around 10 weeks. So we need to focus on, instead of going,
and this
worst
is 10
case
weeks gestation, isn't
gestation,
it?
Yeah.
So not because this is not from the point where the sperm and the egg have come together.
But here's the other thing: people will go 10 weeks old. That's what they've said to me on doorsteps. 10 weeks old, and I go gestation, very different.
Yeah.
Because you say 10 weeks old, what do you see? A baby.
Yeah, a baby.
A born baby.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, everyone instinctively wants to protect an infant, even if they've no relationship to it.
Yeah.
And that's what the no side trades on. You know, but who's going to protect an infant more than anyone? The person carrying it. But,
yeah.
You know, when it's a crisis pregnancy, it's not an infant yet. It's not an infant yet. It will be someday if the person's able to continue the pregnancy. I'm being very frank now because I don't want to leave any questions unanswered. I don't want anyone to think we're hiding. I have nothing to hide.
No.
Those are my beliefs. And I hope it's useful to someone.
Tara. Oh. Looking back at the campaign, who's been the most reasonable from the no side, would you say?
I honestly don't think their position is reasonable because you're depriving someone of rights. So no matter how softly you speak, how little you swear, how nice your tie or your pearls are, if you're advocating to keep someone else's rights from them, I don't feel that that's reasonable.
Yeah.
I think that to advocate to force someone to remain pregnant against their will, advocate for torture, I don't think that's reasonable or moral. I don't think it's moral. They often claim the moral high ground, and I don't think it's moral to do those things. I don't think it's moral to keep someone in poverty.
No.
When they're already struggling. People say I don't see them as very loving people. And again, not people struggling with this idea, not people of faith, not people who might end up voting no. I'm talking about people cynically manipulating facts and advocating for no.
But they've had 35 years to come up with alternatives to
abortion. They haven't come up with any, exactly. They'll say, well, we should get more supports. But it's like, I could have been offered €1 million, a partner, this is a bit in my show, but maybe I'd win the lottery, a partner might suddenly appear, time machines might be invented and I could be 10 years younger. And I weighed all that up. Maybe I'd suddenly want to be a parent. Maybe I'd survive the pregnancy. Maybe. I didn't want to have an abortion, but I still needed one.
Yeah.
I would have preferred not to have needed one. I needed one. It was the right thing for me. You could have offered me €1 million and I would have gone, I still can't be pregnant. I still can't. That's not what it is. I just knew that I couldn't. And when I say I couldn't, please believe me. You know, so I think people talk about the marriage equality referendum as the love referendum, and that, oh, this one is a hard sell. But I think this is also a love referendum.
Yeah, it is. It is.
I think it's about loving the person who is at the centre of the crisis and trusting them enough to make what is the right decision for them. And
I will not be shamed either for supporting this referendum.
No, I'm proud to support this referendum. I'm proud of everyone who's worn a yes badge. I'm proud of Anna Cosgrave for finding a visible way for us to all find each other in our reveal jumpers.
Yeah.
I'm proud of Róisín Ingle for speaking out and risking her platform and her job to do it. I am proud of everyone who has stood up and been counted on this. I'm proud of all the lads who are having the conversations with other lads right now. I'm proud, and I think you're loving, moral, good, kind people, and don't let anyone tell you you're not. This is a new Ireland, no matter what happens on Friday. But please, please vote yes. Please vote yes on the 25th.
Yeah, please. I think we should just end it here. Oh my God.
Oh.
Whew. That was Tara there. I feel we had a good chat. It's getting very heavy now. This week just cannot go quick enough. It feels like it's going so slow. Thank you so much to Tara Flynn, my guest. She's an actress and comedian. She's fantastic. Thank you so much to Sarah Garvey, who produces the show. Alan Bennett, who is the top lad at Head Stuff and who's helped me loads. Thank you very much to William Conway, who did the artwork, and Bobby O'Hearn from No Monster Club and No Monster Club, who did the theme tune for the Alison Spittle Show.
This podcast is part of the Head Stuff Podcast Network.